live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, tomorrow morning is the Regional Food Bank's massive Thanksgiving meal distribution, the largest such single-day allocation in state history. We'll get the details. Dan Hoos, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, is here with the latest from the legislature. And Noah Eckstein of the Overlook has some stories from the Catskills region, including a quiet Shandaken neighborhood rocked by tragedy, a beloved yoga teacher remembered, and a new community project for Eve Insler. Plus, the latest episode of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. Tom Candela speaks with Keith Varney, creator of the play 10 Times I Should Have Known I Was Autistic. It's coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Russia says it has yet to see an official copy of a new U.S.-backed peace plan for Ukraine. A draft proposal of the deal, crafted by White House envoy Steve Witkoff and his Russian counterpart, publicly surfaced in a series of media leaks earlier this week. NPR's Charles Means has more from Moscow.
Amid an avalanche of media reports outlining a peace plan that critics argue skews in Russia's favor, Moscow has remained largely silent. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov acknowledged that while there had been contacts with the U.S., there was, quote, no process that could be called consultations on Ukraine. In fact, Peskov said Moscow had yet to receive an official copy of the U.S. proposal. Russian President Vladimir Putin has also said little about the most recent U.S. diplomatic push. Instead, the Kremlin released new footage of Putin visiting a military command post as his top brass claimed new Russian advances across the front line. Ukraine disputed that assessment. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
A federal judge in the U.S. says that she will soon rule on whether to order the release of the migrant Kilmar Abrego Garcia. He was mistakenly deported to El Salvador in March and then returned, but he's still in U.S. immigration custody as the U.S. government continues to try to deport him. Abrego Garcia has offered to go to Costa Rica, which earlier said it would accept him. But his lawyer, Simon Sandoval Moschenberg, says the U.S. government keeps trying to send him to yet another African country.
The fundamental question of why the government is insisting on protracted legal battles to send Mr. Abrego Garcia across the Atlantic Ocean to now four different African countries, when there is a Central American country that has already offered him refugee status.
Abrego Garcia still faces human smuggling charges and a trial next year. He has denied the accusations. Stocks opened higher this morning on Wall Street at the end of a mostly down week on the markets. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 150 points in early trading.
Retail sales figures are one of many data points delayed by the six-week government shutdown. Many individual retailers have been delivering financial reports this week. The results have been mixed, but a consistent theme is that shoppers are being cautious and hunting for bargains. Stock in Ross Stores and The Gap opened higher after both reported better-than-expected quarterly sales. With a double-digit tariff on goods from Japan, the U.S. imported less from that country in October, but Japanese firms made up for it with higher sales to the rest of the world. Japan's overall exports were up 3.7% from a year ago. Tokyo's Nikkei stock index fell overnight. Stocks were also down in Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Seoul. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks are now mixed on Wall Street. The Nasdaq is down by more than 30 points. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. President Trump will welcome New York City Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani to the White House today. Both leaders have heavily criticized each other. A massive new AI data center will be online by next year. That's according to Foxconn, the Taiwanese manufacturing giant. It's building the data center on the island of Taiwan, which NPR's Emily Fang reports is trying to beef up.
The $1.4 billion data center will be Taiwan's most powerful configuration of what are called GPUs, a type of semiconductor designed for applications like artificial intelligence. The chips come from NVIDIA, founded by Taiwanese-American Jensen Huang. NVIDIA is now valued at around $5 trillion, making it the world's most valuable company. Taiwan is also where many of NVIDIA's chips are made, but NVIDIA's biggest market is the U.S. and China, which says it wants to take over Taiwan one day. That has put Taiwan in an awkward spot. It's been investing in its own computing centers, like the Foxconn one, to boost its own computing capabilities. Meanwhile, Foxconn is also partnering with OpenAI to build parts for new data centers in the U.S., according to an announcement yesterday. Emily Fang, NPR News.
Delegates to the UN Climate Summit in Brazil were interrupted yesterday by a fire that broke out in a building. The fire was contained. About a dozen people were treated for smoke inhalation. Today is the last official day of the climate conference. Delegates are still wrangling over the use of fossil fuels worldwide. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include MS Now, home to The Rachel Maddow Show, Morning Joe, The Briefing with Jen Psaki, and more. MS Now is a source for news, opinion, and the world. Learn more at ms.now. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Dan Hoost is here, and he'll join us in just a moment. But first, tomorrow morning is the Regional Food Bank's massive Thanksgiving meal distribution. It's the largest single-day allocation in state history. In the Hudson Valley alone, the Regional Food Bank will provide an unprecedented 115,000 Thanksgiving meals to 25,000 people, each receiving a 30-plus pound bag filled with turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing, mix, gravy, vegetables, all the stuff you need for Thanksgiving. It's scheduled to begin at 10 a.m. at locations around the region, and the distribution site in Sullivan County is in the back parking lot of the Sullivan County Government Center in Monticello. Jason Dole spoke with Barry Lewis of the Regional Food Bank for more.
Saturday about 10 a.m. is when we have advertised, and people will be able to drive up. It's the back parking lot, the one that folks know where a short line is on Sturgis Road. So it's going to be the back parking lot. You're going to be able to drive your car up, and you won't even have to leave your car. You pull up, and we'll have several lanes, and we're going to be distributing turkey as well as a 30-pound bag. And I'm saying it's 30 pounds because in it's going to be all the Thanksgiving fixings, your gravy, potatoes, apples, stuffing mix, dessert, everything that somebody would want to have, a cranberry sauce, everything you would want to have a really good holiday meal. And it's one bag per vehicle for family. We'll also have a walk-up capability as well. We'll give you the bag, and you can be on your way. And we're doing it on the Saturday before Thanksgiving because we want people to enjoy the holiday. We don't want them to have to wait online on Thanksgiving. So you get it on Saturday, and you'll have it, and you'll be all ready for the holiday.
Yeah, and you don't really want, you know, food bank workers and other folks having to work on the holiday as well, right?
Well, I'll tell you, normally a lot of us don't work on Saturday, but every single member of the Regional Food Bank is going to be working on Saturday. But we're going to be joined by 800 volunteers in the Hudson Valley. In Sullivan County, there's already a waiting list for volunteers. So we're going to have between 35 and 40 volunteers, community members, people who, you know, they want to spend their Saturday morning helping their friends, their neighbors. It's such a great feeling. So they'll be out there at 7 a.m. getting the food off our big trucks, getting the bags ready for folks. And we know people will be lining up early as it's a first come, first serve. So we're so appreciative of the volunteers taking their time to help us with this.
That's great. You know, I'm wondering, from your perspective at the food bank, is there an increase in demand for food support?
Oh, Jason, it's been, we knew starting the year, and I've said post-pandemic, there's been an increase. Every pantry would tell you they're seeing more people. Then as the year wore on, we had USDA cuts, which meant that food banks were going to be getting less from the federal government. And as we all know, just a couple of weeks ago, and even though the government shutdown ended, people are still feeling the effects of the SNAP cuts that were, you know, disrupted. So over the last 2.5-3 weeks, the Regional Food Bank has had more than 24 pop-up pantries throughout the region. We were in Highland Falls, right where West Point is. And we were helping folks who suddenly government workers who weren't getting checks. And we've been throughout the area with these pop-up pantries. And this is above and beyond what we normally work with the pantries. And this was going on as we were working to set up Thanksgiving because we knew there were people in need. So, yeah, we figured out, you know, we were looking for donations. We had some wonderful, generous donors because we have to buy the food. A lot of it is rescued food. We have tremendous support from our partners, a lot of the supermarkets, Stop and Shop, ShopRite, Adams, Target, Sam's Club. They all give. But for the amount of food we were suddenly, unexpectedly giving out, we had to purchase a lot. And it was one of these things where, you know, we're purchased. And we'll hopefully figure out later that, you know, we can't lose money on this. But that wasn't a priority. The priority was people suddenly had no SNAP benefits and they needed help. And so we're coming off that. And now it's Thanksgiving. And Jason, you know, when we talk about Thanksgiving, it's family getting together and it's food. It's a special time. And it's hard to wrap our arms around the idea that there are families still in this country, you know, the richest in the world, that are not going to have Thanksgiving. If there's just something we can do to help, and if it means giving out 400 Thanksgiving meals in Sullivan County, and that's just in Sullivan, we'll be doing it throughout the whole region, that's what we're going to do. So in a little way, hoping to present and have people have a happy Thanksgiving.
I mentioned in the intro, there are community partners helping make this distribution possible all over the state. Who are some of the Sullivan County partners helping you out?
In Sullivan County, we got tremendous support from the People for People Fund. It's one that I was associated with at the Times Herald Record, and they really have stepped up and provided some great donations. So there's those. And then we've had a lot of individual folks giving, you know, some dollars. So we've had big partners in lots of different areas. So a lot of the, because we have so many distribution sites, six sites in five counties in the Hudson Valley, depending on where folks were, companies stepped up and they've just been tremendously supportive.
And before we go, if someone in the community wants to volunteer to help out in Sullivan County, maybe even at the last minute or even after this event, what should they do?
Well, if they go to regionalfoodbank.net, and there's a link. There is a waiting list to help volunteer, but there's never a waiting list to help volunteer, you know, the rest of the year. And we are always looking for donations. We have our holiday hunger appeal coming up. We know there are people visiting pantries who've never gone before. You know, senior citizens on fixed incomes where suddenly the cost of food is so high. Couples, both of them working, and they're just trying to make ends meet. And what we can do and what the pantries are doing is just giving a hand up to folks who suddenly find themselves in a difficult situation. So if they go to regionalfoodbank.net, they'll find out how they can volunteer, what's closest in their area, and how they can support our mission.
And I'm actually at regionalfoodbank.net right now checking it out. And that's where you can also get details about the distribution that's happening on Saturday at the Government Center in Monticello. Of course, it's happening in 22 other counties across the state, too. Again, that's regionalfoodbank.net. We've been talking to Barry Lewis with the Regional Food Bank. Barry, thank you so much for doing this good work.
Jason, thank you very much. And we want to thank WJFF and Radio Catskill for all the help and support. And we wish you and your listeners a happy Thanksgiving. And the volunteers coming out, they're going to make it a happy Thanksgiving to a lot of friends and neighbors.
Thanks to Jason Dole for that with Barry Lewis of the Regional Food Bank. And one of the other partners that's been helping out in the Sullivan County area is Dan Hoost in Sullivan County Government, Communications Director, joins us Fridays. Yes, I heard that you've been helping get some of those volunteers and there's a healthy amount of them helping out tomorrow.
Yeah, I think they're full up for the amount of volunteers that they need. at the Sullivan County Government Center. So those volunteers, some of them will be on site as early as 7 a.m., and others will be just helping with bagging things probably around 9. I would encourage anyone who is coming to get food to not wait till 10 o'clock to arrive, because there'll probably be a line. So you'll want to be in that line, because once the supplies are exhausted, they're exhausted. Although that said, if you miss out on this food event and you still need food, we can hook you up with the people that you need to talk to. You can give a call to our social services office, 845-292-0100, 292-0100. You can call to see if there are some food pantries that they could refer you to. We also have a community assistance center, which we probably just recently received triple the amount of food that we normally get because we weren't sure what was going to happen with SNAP. Mm-hmm. And now, thankfully, SNAP benefits are back being delivered, but we have lots of food still to give out.
And you can find a list of food pantries and food resources in our area at our website, wjffradio.org. About SNAP, SNAP benefits back, is that getting back to normal for recipients in the county?
It seems to be. Yep. Everyone has been getting it. It's electronic now, so people are getting their EBT cards refilled. That same number I just gave, though, is what you can call if you had a question or a concern about it. Now we're really just waiting on HEAP to have that season start. We're thinking it's going to be the 24th, but we are not certain of that. And so right now it's just a wait and see. I will be back on here letting you know when it's going to start.
Let's talk about some other things that are coming out of Monticello. The proposed budget, we've talked about that before. The hearings are coming up for the public to weigh in. The first one's coming up December 2nd. That's a couple weeks right after the holiday. Yeah,
that's a Tuesday, December 2nd, 5 p.m. And then Thursday, December 4th at 10:45 a.m. Those are going to both be in the hearing room of the Government Center in Monticello. The budget is posted on the website, available for you to review, or you can stop by the county manager's office, where I work, actually, to get a physical copy. We can give you both the detailed copy and the executive summary, which, ironically, this year is larger than the detailed copy. I'm not exactly sure why that is, but we can load you up with all the information you could possibly want to see why are we talking about a 9.1% tax increase and what am I getting for my money. And then, of course, to come and make comments about it. The public hearing is not a Q&A session. It's going to be there to make comments. So if you have questions ahead of time, it's behooves you to take a look at the document and then send your questions and your comments. You can also send to the clerk of the legislature, Anne Marie Martin. She is there during normal business hours, but also you can call her at 845-807-0435, 807-0435.
And you've encouraged folks to provide their comments and engage mm-hmm. with legislators and with the county government, attend these hearings as well. Have you heard from the legislators or anyone else in government about some initial response from the public?
I know legislators are talking about seeing what we can do to reduce the 9.1% tax mm-hmm. increase. So I think there may very well be a movement towards that. They haven't really met in depth about it yet. I think we'll hear more about that as we move into December. They have till December 20th to adopt the budget. Right now, it's just a proposed budget by the county manager. Legislators, as the duly elected representatives of the taxpayers, will make the final determination as to what budget is adopted. So there's more to come. I would expect that sometime in mid-December, they will finally make a decision. But I do expect that they're going to have comments to make as well about it.
All right. Some other news. Warming centers have opened. Let's remind folks where those warming centers are for folks in need of some shelter during the colder months.
Yeah, tonight's the opening night. They open at 8 p.m. and then they'll stay open till 8 a.m. So anytime during the night from now through mid-April, if you need a warm, safe place to stay, maybe even a little bit of food with it as well, you can find that at the St. John Episcopal Church on St. John Street in Monticello and or the Liberty United Methodist Church on North Main Street in Liberty. Those churches, plus the Federation for the Homeless, are our partners in helping make sure that we have these locations staffed through those hours. And also, if you're going to be concerned through the day, especially as it gets into the colder parts of the winter, they can help refer you to the right services and programs that we have at the county to help you find a place to stay during the day and even during the night. Because these overnights, while a lot of people use them, if we could help you get out of having to use our warming shelters and into a shelter that or actual more permanent housing, that's what we'd like to do.
We're speaking with Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday, most Fridays. He wasn't here last week, and I guess yes. We're going to skip next week.
And I won't be here next week because you won't be having.
We're going to preempting, yeah. Yes. We have okay. a special.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you. It's all about you. No.
Is it like the puppy bowl or something?
Yes. Oh, that'd be fun. We should do that.
Yes. It would be.
How do
it
you do that great. On the radio? Anyway, one of the other things happening, we've been talking about broadband and the installation of the broadband project. But today, the actual LDC for broadband is dissolving. Talk mm-hmm. about that and how it impacts, if it does, the project.
It doesn't impact the project. The broadband LDC was created many years ago to help us really work on what became a public-private partnership to install broadband, well, to make broadband accessible across the county in as many locations as possible. Because up until recently, I think we still had some people using dial-up. And I know that there's satellite services now. I think Starlink is the latest one that's come that people are raving about. But that's fairly expensive, actually. And the other providers of broadband service in the county have only gone so far into the county's hinterlands. I always wanted to say that on the radio, hinterlands. So the broadband LDC basically has done what it was designed to do. And we don't need it anymore because the county and Archtop Fiber are now and not only in an agreement that's been funded by the state, a $30 million project, but we're actively rolling it out. We are trenching because a lot of it's going to be underground. We are stringing wires to our communications towers too, because there's going to be a wireless component where you can actually get wireless broadband service at what I anticipate will be the cheapest price you can find it anywhere in Sullivan County. So the LDC today is having its final meeting to dissolve itself. That is not a cause for concern. That is just us being exactly where we should be.
Our reporter Kimberly Iser was at yesterday's legislative meeting and understood that there were some Sullivan West students there. Mm-hmm. And interesting, she said that they did make some interesting comments, including not being happy about their reliable Wi-Fi in school yes. buildings. So hoping that this project might take care of that.
Mm-hmm. Although now they have to put their cell phones away.
Well, they weren't happy about that.
Yeah, can't help with that. But yeah, this project should help with all of that. It was nice. I had a chance to speak to them as well. They were the participation in government class members of the Sullivan West High School. We will be entertaining Eldred's High School class of the same next month. And any other high schools that would like to bring their classes, you can not only watch the legislature meetings, but then you can also have a chance to talk directly, an interactive discussion with. We had our county treasurer, Nancy Buck, treasurer-elect Kathleen Lara, myself, our deputy human resources commissioner, Sherita Augustin, and we also had our deputy public safety commissioner, Alex Rao, and our legislator from District 5, Kat Scott. So there was a real great back and forth. I think the young people were very engaged, and let's face it, these are the people who are going to be running our county and living in our county and paying taxes in our county in the future.
Other youth represented yesterday. Sullivan 180 presented their youth program. There were two teens from Monticello. What did they have to say?
They spoke about a program, I think, called the Spartan Program that Sullivan 180 is doing. I think you've probably had yep. folks on here to talk about it before. And really all I wanted to mention was that it was so great to have these two young ladies get up and speak very confidently to the legislature in front of not only their peers from Monticello School District, who was represented, but also from the Sullivan West School District, of which the Sullivan West visit was completely separate. But it showed them interacting with the government. A lot of people, especially at that age, are thinking the government's some big, scary, unknowable monster. And I get that feeling. Sometimes it can feel that way. But especially me being the communications director for the county, trying to inform the public about what we do and where. It's great, very actually satisfying and fulfilling to see teenagers come out and confidently interact with and communicate with the people that maybe they didn't vote to represent them, but their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents did, and seeing that they could have an impact on these folks. They don't sit behind some huge metal shield that you have to pick up some horn to yell at kind of thing. They're right there, and they were the legislators were very appreciative, actually all the county officials were, to hear from them, because it's important what they have to say. It's important what they're doing, because that's what they were talking about. And it's important that they feel like they have the ability to address their government when they need to.
Another great thing to see with youth are those holiday concerts that come up every holiday season. Those are starting soon, too.
Yes, we have a huge list. I haven't actually counted it, but I think we have something like 17 or 18 different concerts that are going to be starting.
And these are the local high schools, and they're
and elementary.
Oh, and elementary, too. Right. And they're music programs. They're bands.
Yep. It'll be bands, choruses. There could be some dance involved. There has been in years past. So it's going to be from all our local high schools, including even Minnesink Valley High School. I had somebody ask me the other day, they're in Sullivan County? That sounds like Orange County. No, actually down by Bloomingburg, the Minnesink Valley School District is there. So we're going to be welcoming starting December 5th and then most of the weekdays thereafter through December 19th. Sometimes we will have multiple performances in one day. Hopefully I've done my work and actually we'll make sure that they're all spaced out appropriately. One thing to be aware of is that now that we have the bag and body scanners in the lobby of the government center, the room is going to be a little bit tighter for people to listen. So if you want a seat to listen to them, you want to come maybe a little bit before they're there. Otherwise, you'll probably be standing. But listen, these are free concerts. Even if you're just walking through, stop and listen. Applaud when it's time to do so. These kids live for this.
Let's start December 5th at the Government Center. Speaking of the Government Center, a happy birthday to the Government Center. 50 years old.
Yes, 50 years ago on November 19th, 1975, they had a dedication ceremony. The building had been open since the late summer of 1975, but it was major because we moved out of the courthouse. The county courthouse had a lot of our offices. It's where the Board of Supervisors used to meet. And there were a lot of other offices, though, scattered around Monticello. We needed to have a central location. What people didn't realize until I discovered it in an old Republican Watchman was that the cornerstone that said 1975 and was laid into the building on the 20th of November 1975 actually had a time capsule in it. Oddly enough, it didn't say when it was to be opened, and no one remembered it as the years went by. It just continued to exist. No one even in our public works realized that that cornerstone, which wasn't even where it had originally been laid now, it was just in storage, had a time capsule in it. But then while I was looking up 50th anniversary information, I saw that the former Board of Supervisors Chairman Joe Raffa of Neversink and the former county historian, I think his name was William Smith, were inserting papers directly into it. And it was like, oh, what is this? I went and took a look. And there was a cap on that cornerstone that everyone thought had just been a repair of a crack or something. Uh-huh. Nope, it was hiding a time capsule. So last month, we opened it up, and I shot a video of it. You can see it online on our social media and YouTube channels. It actually had most of the towns participating. They were asked to submit information about their history, documents. We even had a coin that was minted for the bicentennial in the town of Rockland with the Livingston Manor covered bridge on it. So I've been cataloging and documenting that. I'm going to post some more pictures as we go along. For me, the most satisfying part was the person who orchestrated all this 50 years ago was my predecessor. It wasn't director of communications then, but it was the same job, the director of publicity and tourism for the county, a guy named Ben Kaplan, who I was privileged to work with in my early years at the Sullivan County Democrat. But I never knew he did this until we opened up this time capsule and saw that it was some of the stuff was addressed to him.
Oh, wow.
So here I am, his successor 50 years later, able to rediscover what he put together, and it's just been the coolest experience. So
you should do one for the next 50 years.
Oh, we're planning on it. Yeah, because that cornerstone has space in it. We're just going to try to do it in a way that's maybe more hermetically sealed. There was moisture sealed in with this that made everything very wet. So not everything has survived to this time, but most of it was recoverable. And I'm going to be posting pictures as we go along of what we found.
We'll give you a Radio Catskill tote bag to put in.
Okay, great.
But before we go, I want to mention something. Folks have been mentioning to me this American Revolution series from Ken Burns on PBS and how good it is. What I didn't know was that there's a local connection. There's a local backdrop that was used.
Yes. They had part of a film team. I don't believe Mr. Burns himself came. I think it was just to use for some B-roll or something. I haven't watched it myself. But Fort Delaware, which is a period-accurate recreation of a 1750s-era colonial fort that existed just upriver of the location where it is now in Narrowsburg. This one was built in the 50s by our former county historian, Mr. Burbank, but it is so accurately reproduced and well-maintained, not only by our Division of Public Works, but the nonprofit that runs it for us, the Delaware Company, that these folks who were making this Revolutionary War documentary, like, this is perfect for us to show what life was like during that time. So if you watch some of the episodes, keep an eye out. You will see Fort Delaware there.
All right. Before we go, happy Thanksgiving. Government Center closed Thursday, Friday next week.
Thursday and Friday. We used to be open in years past on Friday for half a day. We will not. We will be closed both Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, and the Friday thereafter. Have a wonderful holiday, everybody.
And you too. Thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, news from the Overlook, your voice in the Catskills. This is Radio Chatskill.
The Radio Catskill Music Auction is live online. Bid on rare, collectible vinyl records like the infamous Beatles Butcher cover, a holy grail for record collectors, Profile by Duke Pearson on the Blue Note Jazz label, and music from Big Pink. The band wrote it in the Catskills. You can buy it to support Radio Catskill. Don't miss your chance to get your hands on all of our incredible items and experiences. Bid on the music auction at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Join us for Turkey Confidential, our annual call-in show for that crazy cooking day, Thanksgiving. We'll take your calls and get help from our amazing friends, Samin Nosrat, Yassi Arefi, Vivian Howard, and Evan Kleiman. That's Turkey Confidential on Thanksgiving Day from 8 p.m.
Listen to Turkey Confidential Thanksgiving morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, from a shocking murder-suicide in Shandaken to Eve Ensler's new project, V's Next Act, focused on healing and community and the passing of a beloved Woodstock yoga teacher, The Overlook has the news of the region. The community nonprofit is your voice in the Catskills, serving Hunter, Hurley, Olive, Socrates, Shandaken, and Woodstock. And the editor-in-chief of The Overlook is Noah Eckstein, and he joins us now with more. Noah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Good morning.
Yeah, so this is a lead story, pretty shocking. A Shandaken couple found dead at an apparent murder-suicide shocks the whole neighborhood. Tell us more what we know about the timeline and the victims.
Yeah, I mean, for that Shandaken story, our reporter, Jim Rich, spent a lot of time speaking with neighbors on the Highview Road, which is in Shandaken, you know, very rural community. You know, they were shocked and grieving. This was a longtime couple in the community. People knew them. They saw them at the grocery store. They saw them at local plays. So when thinking about the story, you know, our job, I view the Overlook's job is very much to humanize the people that are often just reported on in terms of a press release or something. So, you know, Jim spoke to neighbors, spoke to members of the Shandaken Zoning Board to learn a bit more about who these people were. And one neighbor said, you know, they saw Deborah, you know, this was a murder-suicide. Recently she talked about being depressed. So this was very much a mental health issue.
Mm. What else did the neighbors tell you about the couple and you know, humanizing them so that they're remembered well?
Yeah, so our reporter Jim Rich worked on this story, and what neighbors talked about, you know, this man Brahman, he was 69, Warren was 68. She would often sing at plays at the Phoenicia Playhouse. He was an avid Yankees fan and loved the Rolling Stones. You know, and was related to a journalist. His brother was a journalist, and his sister worked for the town of Shandaken. So, you know, very local community-oriented folk. He worked at Amatec Rotron, which is a arms factory in Woodstock, one of the biggest employers in Woodstock. But to hear that, you know, he shot and killed his longtime partner and then turned the gun on himself is just shocking news. So we'll continue to report anything that comes up on this.
In another story, you've got a profile of Eve Ensler, who was known for writing the vagina monologues, the artist formerly known as Eve Ensler, I should say, now known as V. Tell us about this next act for V.
Yeah, you know, I think she talks about this in her memoir, The Apology, why she changed her name from Eve Ensler, which everyone knew her by. You know, she's Broadway legend, wrote the vagina monologues, super popular. She changed it because her father actually sexually abused her, and she wanted to move away from that last name and create her own name. You know, she moved up in 2015 after a battle with uterine cancer to the Hudson Valley, sort of on the Hurley-Kingston border. She's speaking in Woodstock on Sunday at St. Gregory's Church. She's in conversation with Gail Straub, and she is totally spiritual. She and views all of her work, whether as a playwright or someone who's thinking about movements, you know, to help women and girls around the world. She's thinking of everything in terms of art as activism, and her whole kitchen is pink. It's amazing. And she said every aspect of the kitchen represents a different part of the vagina. So she's very eccentric and cool.
Yeah,
I hope people read the profile.
Well, yeah, this was a profile that you did. So you got to go to her house there in Ulster County. And what else did you learn about some of the other activism that she's working on, some other things that she's got on tap?
Yeah, so she's, you know, you hear global activist and you expect someone totally inaccessible who's, you know, just around the whole entire world. But instead, she was very much someone who jokes about organizing all the unpopular girls in grade school, you know, who sits on an earthship on her property with friends and people who work for her. She sort of created this compound. But she is, you know, advocating for what she calls the genocide in Gaza. She's worked in the Congo, always focusing on mental health and women's rights. So she helped spearhead a movement called V-Day, which looks at, you know, issues against girls and women across the world. And she's always working, always figuring out ways to be an activist.
There's an interesting detail in this profile that you wrote in The Overlook about her vision attracting collaborators. Talk a little bit about her executive producer and director of artistic campaigns and how they met.
Yeah, Tony is his name. They've worked together now for over two decades, and he, in like 2003, put a post looking for work as a playwright, and they sort of linked up and started working together, and he is now her executive producer on all sorts of things. And he was it was an interesting interview because I was in her kitchen and people were sort of walking in and out. He was there, and he doesn't live on her compound, but would often stay. And so it's very much an artist's haven. And that seems to be how she treats people, as, you know, as equals, and always an open table. So it was a very welcoming environment.
Yeah. They call themselves Cosmic Collaborators. And another story we want to mention before we go, remembrance of a local yoga teacher with a really devoted following, Barbara Boris.
Yeah, Barbara was beloved in Woodstock. You know, she built the Woodstock Yoga Center and had a huge circle of students who saw her as both a teacher and a friend. She was, you know, as the obituary that our writer John Barry wrote, wonderfully human. She wasn't just this spiritualist yogi. She was a Trekkie, a graphic designer, a Sanskrit geek. You know, her life really showed how culture and spiritual communities form in a place like Woodstock. But she passed away. She died at 66 from complications and embolism from, you know, pretty routine hip surgery, which was a shock to the community.
there's a memorial service tomorrow at 3:30 at Mountain View Studio in Woodstock. Noah, thank you so much for joining us. Noah Eckstein is the editor-in-chief of The Overlook. It's the community nonprofit journalism serving Hunter, Hurley, Olive, Saugerties, Shandaken, and Woodstock. And your voice in the Catskills. You can read these stories and more at theoverlooknews.com. Noah, thanks for being here, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. We'll take a break, and when we come back, it's the latest episode of our theater podcast, Curtain Call, with Tom Candela. We'll get a preview next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey there, it's Kimberly Izar, host of Farming Country. This week, we're taking you into the wondrous world of something you probably look at every week, maps. Lisa Lyons of Morgan Outdoors shares what all those tiny little lines on a topographic map mean.
It's like being a bird, really.
Plus, we learn about an effort to protect 136 acres along the Schwagunk Ridge. That's this week on Farming Country, Saturday mornings at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. One of our other great local programs is the podcast Curtain Call with Tom Candela. New episodes drop every Friday at WJFFradio.org. And Tom is here to tell us about the latest episode, which is really interesting. You spoke with Keith Varney about his play, 10 Times I Should Have Known I Was Autistic.
Yes.
Tell us more about Keith Varney and his play.
Well, Keith, you know, recently, within the last year or so, discovered that he was autistic. He had a lot of autistic traits that he wasn't aware of. But over time, and speaking with some friends who had been diagnosed with autism, he discovered that he himself had a lot of the traits consistent with being on the spectrum. And in so doing, he put together, because he's a writer, he's a producer, he's an actor, he put together a play, a one-man play, that's what premiered this past couple of weeks over at the United Soho Theater Festival in New York City. And he put on this one-man show about that discovery. And it's a comedy, and he uses his other talents, bringing that into the show to reveal this discovery of himself. Very vulnerable, very, in-depth conversation that we had about this, and he uses comedy to work his way through it.
Yeah, he uses humor
and
honesty to show folks how he's embraced his identity.
Exactly. And, you know, his neurodivergence was, as I said, a new discovery for him. And it sort of it sheds a light on for other people in watching the show of what that is, and making it more because acceptable, if you will, you know, because it's a hard thing to deal with for a lot of people. So it was a wonderful, wonderful conversation that we had. We had a lot of fun. We talked about certainly the show itself, but we also talked about Dungeons and Dragons. We're both big fans. So it's a good episode.
All right, let's take a listen. It's a preview of the episode. Curtain Call, the full episode drops today at WJFFradio.org.
Yeah,
it's out there now. Let's hear a preview of Curtain Call with Tom Candela.
Thanks, Tim. Today, we are going to dive into a remarkable new one-man show. The name of the show is 10 Times I Should Have Known I Was Autistic, and it is the latest work from writer, composer, actor, and all-around storytelling chameleon Keith Varney. Keith retraces, in the show, 10 moments from his life, or 10 clues, if you will, that he overlooked, that ultimately led to his late-in-life autism discovery. Keith, I want to welcome you to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. So I'm going to start with the first question I have, basically at the very beginning. When did this idea for 10 Times I Should Have Known I Was Autistic first take hold?
Well, I have to say, this has been a bit of a whirlwind. A year ago today, I did not know that I was autistic at all.
Wow.
It was about this time last year that my oldest friend, we were friends since we were 6 years old, called me up and told me that he just discovered that he was neurodivergent, and then was like, hey, we've been friends for a very long time. We have a great deal in common. Have you ever considered dot, dot, dot? And that kicked off this whole journey of exploration and trying to figure out what was going on in my own head and looking back through my entire history. And so that exploration sort of sent me through this journey, re-examining and recontextualizing my entire life and realizing, oh, wow, this is why this, this is why this, this explains these pieces of my life that I've never been able to explain. Oh. And so as I'm kind of working through all of these chapters in my life, I'm sort of writing it because that's how I work through things. I'm a writer, so I write. And so sometimes it's a therapy exercise, and sometimes it turns into a show. And this is sort of one of those ones that started as like, I'm just exploring stuff to understand myself. And oh, wait a minute, you know what? This might be a show. And so the structure of it came very quickly.
Okay. So now the framework for the show is 10 moments or clues that you should have recognized early on in your life. Were there just 10, or did you find in writing and in sitting down and going through this catharsis in writing, there were more than 10?
Oh, there are endless. Mm. Endless. I chose 10 because it was a good round number for the structure of a show. The neurodivergence or autism influences literally every aspect of your life. So whether it's a relationship or an incident or how you look at it, how you experience it is different. So I could think through every single piece of my life and think, huh, I reacted this way. I thought about it this way. I experienced it this way emotionally because of autism, and I just didn't know it.
Got it. Got it. So that must have been really a sense of relief almost in discovering some of these things, right? Because I would think explained a lot of things in your life.
I think that's exactly right. There was always this missing piece, right? This missing piece of data in the back of my head. And it was very frustrating because there were parts of my life I didn't understand, experiences I couldn't explain, feelings. And it was frustrating. But then this missing piece came in and it was like, you know, that last Tetris piece that comes in and clears the whole row.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow. And what came with it was, it didn't really change anything, but it rewrote the context of it. So I felt so much peace because I didn't have this pebble in my shoe. Like, wait, why did I do that? Why did I feel this way? And right. With that understanding comes, I no longer need to sort of hide it or apologize for it. Oh, this is just who I am. This is just how I work. So it was a tremendous relief, honestly.
So in the 10 that you chose, was there any one of them that was the hardest to write about?
I think the hardest ones and the ones that took the most thought were three foundational relationships in who I am. One was with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
And working through how neurodivergence played a big role in our marriage and in our conflict and in our subsequent beautiful post-romantic relationship. We are still best friends.
Right.
But realizing, wow, this is what I was bringing to the table that was causing all this conflict that I didn't really know or understand. And so you have to bring in some accountability there. The second part of it was my relationship with my career and realizing that autism has influenced my career in all of these ways. And not all bad, right? Some of them very good. But some of them like, oh, this is why you have these obstacles. And so that brings some accountability there, realizing, oh, I played a role in why some things didn't work out. And now that I know that it's there, I'm going to have to find a new way to communicate and a new way to navigate it.
Okay.
But the third way was my relationship with myself and the mask. And the mask is what we put on. Well, we pretend to be processing the world in a neurotypical way, like a normal brain does. And we're sort of trained by growing up in the world, and certainly I was growing up in the 80s and 90s. It's very different now. But back then it was, how do I fit in? How do I look normal? So much of my life was subconsciously ruled by trying to pretend to be normal. And so pretending that I'm comfortable in a situation where I'm uncomfortable in, doing things I don't really want to do to sort of meet expectations. And so looking through the mask and beginning the process of trying to set the mask down and not just see who's there behind it, but accept who's there behind it, I think has been probably the biggest journey of the show itself, in the writing of it, but also just sort of going through this experience. How do I accept this autistic kid who's been in me this whole time that I've spent 40-something years trying to cram into a box and pretend that he's not there? But
then you chose the stage to unmask it. What made you choose a solo show, just you on stage, as this is, as opposed to sort of lightening your load by having other actors on stage with you?
Honestly, I think that this type of storytelling, these type of ideas, and the fact that I'm bouncing through all of my life so quickly, I feel like it would get a little hokey trying to put on like 30 different skits that were 2 minutes long, and that it really just sort of is about my experience. And it just felt like a more direct, more honest, and simpler way to tell the tale, because the story is so complex in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to get through these complicated ideas and concepts that I'm just learning, right? Mm-hmm. As somebody who's doing a crash course in neurodivergence and autism, I'm like that teacher who is only one chapter ahead of the students. So it needed to be fluid as well. I'm changing and improving the show every single day. There are little changes that I will make between performance one and performance two.
Okay.
As I learn more about myself, as I learn more about autism and how I learn to communicate a little better. And once you're adding other people and sort of a narrative structure, it becomes sort of locked in much earlier than I'd like it to be.
You have written other semi-autobiographical plays. I Got Fired being one of them. This
yes.
was, again, something that actually happened to you in life, a job that you
it
lost.
Sure did.
You wrote it as an office comedy. It was a musical. And you had a villain. There was a young lady, I'm going to say, who is the evil nemesis. We won't mention any names. In that
don't worry,
play.
It's been changed.
Yeah, to protect the innocent or not so innocent.
To protect the guilty.
Yeah, to protect sure. the guilty, exactly. So you had a villain in that you can direct some of the angst and anger that was in that piece towards. In 10 times, is the villain, or if there is a villain, would it be misunderstanding by others or by society itself? Or even yourself.
Oh, that is so interesting. I think the villain, although the villain doesn't really have agency, right, mm-hmm. would be our cultural lack of understanding.
Okay.
So the idea that in 1990, I might have said, I think I might be autistic, would have been laughed out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, and that's not malice from anybody.
Yes.
That's just a lack of understanding. And so I think ignorance, isn't it always a villain?
Do you find that you using humor in the show as a tool for connection with the audience or more of a shield to protect yourself so you're not as vulnerable as you are when you are on stage?
Oh, boy. Great question. I think it's always a little bit of both,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think throughout my life, I have always used humor as a defense mechanism.
Okay.
It is the one thing, especially as somebody who struggles with the social cues and expectations, the one thing I can always trust mm-hmm. in any situation is I can be the funny guy. Even if I don't know what the appropriate thing to say is, I can make a joke, and that's almost always welcome.
You're in.
I think in the context of the show, it is, of course, about making a connection with the audience. It's about making the audience comfortable. This is not a dour piece where we all have to sit here in an hour and 20 minutes of trauma and darkness. No, mm-hmm. this is funny. And we can have a sense of humor about this. So it's part about putting it at ease. But also, it's how I frame the world. I think it's the healthiest way that I frame myself by having a sense of humor about myself. And I want the show to be welcoming. I want it to be welcoming for people who are also neurodivergent and know it, mm-hmm. people who are neurodivergent and don't know it, and people who aren't, who are just curious. And I want it to be welcoming for everybody.
For those who are seeing it, who may be autistic or suspect they're autistic or have someone that they know is neurodivergent,
yeah.
what would you hope they take away from 10 times I should have known I was autistic?
Well, the first and most important thing I want them to take away, because this was the first and most important thing that gave me great peace, was you're not alone.
Mm.
And you are seen and welcomed exactly as who you are. It's very, very powerful. That's really what I want.
Right. Well, Keith, this has been great. I do want to direct folks to your website where they can learn more about you and your project. So why don't you give us that information?
Yes. My website is keithvarneywriter.com. And you can see all about this show and all of my other shows. I'm also on Instagram and TikTok at Keith Varney.
Very good. Well, Keith, I want to once again thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
No, it's been a delight. I really appreciate you taking the time with me.
And the full episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela is at our website, wjffradio.org. You can also hear past episodes as well. Before we go, a reminder that Radio Catskills' big annual music sale is happening Saturday, November 29th. Saturday after Thanksgiving from 10 to 3 at the Liberty Mall. We have been going through thousands of vinyl records, CDs, and tapes. We've got record players, stereo equipment, instruments, and more. Somebody just brought a banjo the other day. But a really cool feature this year is Old School Sessions will be DJing live. DJ Chucks and Selector Starkey are celebrating 25 years of Old School Sessions on Radio Catskill, and they're going to be spinning tunes at the music sale, so you got to be there. Also, our online music auction happening right now. Go to WJFFradio.org to see rare vinyl, including that Beatles Butcher cover. We've got high-end turntables, exclusive tickets. We added tickets to Cat Power, the 20th anniversary tour. And also, we've got tickets to the New York Philharmonic and New York City Ballet. Other items up for bid as well. That goes through next week, and that ends on Friday. So if you're local and win something, you just come pick it up at the big music sale. If you're not in the area, you can still bid, of course. We'll get that item to you if you win. Register bid at wjffradio.org right now. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Have a good weekend, and thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Last week on Wait Wait, Tiffany Haddish told us what she did once she finally started making money after years of struggle.
Yeah, I bought a $359 microscope that took pictures of bacteria. And did you know that some bacteria look just like people?
I'm Peter Sagal. You've paid your dues, so time to enjoy your reward this week's news quiz. That's Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
5 years ago, Google released its Nobel Prize-winning program, AlphaFold. How has it changed science, and what's next?
Maybe we made the field of structural biology 5 or 10% faster as a whole, which is really extraordinary when you think about how much work is done, but there's still a lot left to be done.
Plus, the art and science of treating cancer. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, cloudy, a high of 45, 35 for a low tonight. For the weekend, it will be breezy in the morning tomorrow, high of 45 and partly cloudy. A low tomorrow night, 24, and some snow and flurries at times on Sunday, high 38, low of 30 tomorrow or Sunday night. And looking ahead, extended forecast for Thanksgiving weekend. Thanksgiving Day, 42, intervals of clouds and sunshine. Friday the 28th, periods of snow mixing with rain, a high 39. And for the big music sale on Saturday the 29th, mostly cloudy and 39. On Point is coming up next.
What's red and white and hidden all over? If you said Waldo, as in those Where's Waldo kids books, you are correct. And on this week's Selected Shorts, his child is just as interested in finding him as you are. I'm Meg Wolitzer. Be part of our search party this week.
Selected Shorts, Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.